And I said, wow, that's interesting. And so that ends our report for today. Thank you. We'll be back at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I went, wait a minute. You put out a news item, but you didn't finish. What agency is studying that toy? Department of War? Department of State? Justice Department? Department of Interior? Tell me, which one is doing that? They never reported. And further, what country is the United States thinking about going to war with? I guess we got that answered yesterday when they announced that they're going to attack Iran. And I'm going, wow, you're going to attack Iran? You haven't finished with Iraq. You haven't finished up one without... You got to finish up one before you do the next one. But anyway, I'm still waiting for Channel 5 to come out with answers to that. I talked to Dick Case when he came out to visit with me, and I've known Dick for a number of years also. And I told him about that, and I thought maybe he would put it in his paper, but that didn't happen. I talked to Mike McAndrew. It wrote the article in this morning's paper about that, but editors of the Post Standard aren't interested in that. It's something that hasn't happened yet, and so. But I think we have to be aware of what these people are reporting, because what they report is something that's going to come in the future. Now, Bob, I mentioned that the Europeans came up the Hudson River and settled in our house. And at the time, we didn't have immigration rules and regulations or laws, you know. So, and we didn't have a fence or a wall that these people had to cross or crawl over or under. So they just kept coming into our territory. And if you look at history and what is happening in Indian Territory and say, well, we have to watch out for that because that could happen. And I'm watching the news now, and I got down on the Mexican border, you got people are coming in, and guess what? These Europeans that came into our territory as immigrants are now complaining about the immigrants that are coming in. I'm going, wow. There's an expression out there, that, was it, pot is calling kettle black? And there's opposition to this whole thing, you know, but eventually it's going to have to be worked out. Otherwise, you're going to have further chaos in the world, in your world. And you need to have respect for people. I was listening to Pope. He's in Vatican City. He's in that tower with a little window on it where he waves at everybody. He's standing in there one day, and he says, down on the first floor of this building, there's a big meeting going on. He says the various leaders of the various denominations of religion are sitting down, and they got a very important meeting. They're learning how to work together. And these are their topics. And he listed about six different topics that they were talking about. I was sitting in a chair listening to him, and I said, wait a minute, you're missing the most important aspect of this. And I think I got some little assistance here. I said, if those leaders are sitting there talking about their different ways, the only way that they're going to be able to come to any kind of agreement is they have to sit down and respect each other's church and the people in the church. If they don't have respect for each other, they're not going to be able to work together. And as I said these words to my television set, the Pope looked down at the floor, looked back up, waved again at the people from his little window and says, I forgot one important thing. I forgot to mention that they're down there talking about respect for each other.
You're listening to the Onondaga Nation Encounters European Settlers with speakers Chief Irving Paulus Jr. and historian Robert Venables of Cornell University. This is Unwelcome Guests on WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, Free Radio Asheville, WZKW Kingsville, WRFN Nashville, KRBS Oroville, The Surge 96.3, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, or WMRW Warren. We continue with Irving Paulus Jr. and Robert Venables.
Hey, Dick, no questions. That's terrific. It means one of two things. One, we've done a very good job of explaining about the history so well that you don't have any questions. Or, two, you ain't got the foggiest idea what we were talking about.
Well, I certainly think you did an excellent job. Whether I had the foggiest idea, I don't know. That's another matter altogether. I'm curious about two sort of related questions. One is, have there been any or are there any anticipated frontal challenges either through the courts or through legislature to the doctrine of discovery? And also related to that is, has the Haudenosaunee tried to establish or is thinking about establishing any sort of formal dialogue with the Vatican to address the issue of the 15th century papal bulls that the doctrine of discovery is sort of based on?
Well, son of a... What a question. One of the things that a problem with the things that you mentioned is that we have been unable to get into the courts to express our concerns or express our grievances against the state of New York or the United States. Back in 1972, there was a meeting in New York City. 85 different nations were there. And 85 different nations were there. And they were there because they had problems with the United States and they were unable to speak from any kind of platform to anybody about these concerns that they had. So they said to us, the Orrin Lyons and myself were at this meeting, and they said, you have international treaties with the French, the Dutch, and the English. So you have international office. We want you to open up your international office and provide us with the means so that we can talk to the world. So Orrin and I came back to Onondaga, represented to the Onondaga Nation the request from these various nations from out west. And the Onondaga Council says, yeah, we can do that. We'll call a meeting. We'll get all of the nations together. Grants also was called under the process and procedures that were set down in 1142. We had our meeting, and it was decided that we would open up our doors and we would go to Geneva, Switzerland at the UN. And there we would provide a platform from which the native people could present to the world the grievances that they have against the United States. Now, in order to get over to Geneva, Switzerland, you had to cross the waters, you had to go through gates, you had to cross lines, and there's a process and procedures to do that. And we didn't know anything about how to do that, though we had heard, you know, that there was this process. So we said, well, how do you do that? I said, well, you need a passport. A passport, yes. You get a passport, you go down to New York City, you talk to the embassy down there, you get a visa, and the visa allows you to go into a country for a certain period of time for a certain purpose. So he says, where do we get a passport? Go down to the federal building. So we went down to the federal building. They had a passport for U.S. citizens. We don't consider ourselves citizens of the United States or the state of New York. And for us to travel to Geneva, Switzerland on a U.S. passport would be something that we could not do. So we designed our own passport and got it printed up. In 1977, we sent a delegation of 40-some people over to Geneva, Switzerland to present on behalf of the indigenous people. Since that time, we have been into 139 different countries with our passport. And this is an act of sovereignty. We as a people qualify to be a member of the United States, the United Nations. There are five things that you have to have before you become a member of the United Nations. One, you have to have a land base. Two, you have to have a form of government. Three, you have to have a way of settling disputes. And four, you need a language. So we have all of these things. And we had them before the people came into our territory. Dick mentioned that I have been sitting as a leader of the Onondagas in the Beaver Clan position for 35 years. Putting me into that position was done under the process and procedures that was set down in 1142 when the Haudenosaunee was formed. The songs, the speeches that were done at that time to put our leaders up, they're still done today. So we could become members of the United Nations, but we won't, because it kind of clouds your status or who you are if you say you're this and then you do other things. So we have not done so, but the United States is a member of the United Nations. The United States has a land base, yes. They have leaders, yes. They have a president who was asked a couple of weeks ago to define sovereignty, and he couldn't. Sovereignty is easy to define. Sovereignty, according to Webster's Dictionary, means that you are the absolute power. There are no other powers in there. The Onondagas have lived in this territory for the last 10,000 years, alongside of the Oneidas and next to the Cayugas. Our territory runs from Lake Ontario down into the middle of Pennsylvania. We are the government of this people, of this territory, and been there since, for the last 10,000 years, since the glacier left. There's no dispute over who governs that territory. Oneidas don't challenge us, the Cayugas don't, and the other nations don't. So this is Onondaga Nation territory, governed by the Onondaga Nation. There are international laws out there that come into effect also. Governments cannot tax governments, just on general principle, I guess. I don't know the laws. I have to talk to Joe Heath on these issues, on some of these legal issues. But
Bob, do you have anything you want to add to the...
We want to finish up on this one. This is important because governments cannot tax governments. The United States government cannot tax the Onondaga Nation unless we sit down and agree on how that will happen and how the taxes will be. New York State cannot tax the Onondaga Nation unless we sit down and agree how that's going to be. Constitution of the United States says so. It gives the process and procedures for that to happen. We have been told that our treaties are 200 years old. Well, the Constitution of the United States is 200 years old, also. But you can't cast that aside because it's 200 years old. That is still in effect. You people sitting in the audience have rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. And for people in the state of New York who complain about the treaties that we have, saying they're too old, do away with them. I hope they don't come around and tell your people that the United States Constitution is too old, we should do away with it. Because if they do, you people are going to be in a lot of trouble.
With regard to negotiations with the Vatican, there is an informal dialogue with lower echelon Vatican people. So the answer to the Vatican thing is yes. Because the Pope approved the right of discovery, it becomes a Christian doctrine. So any of you who call yourselves Christians, get your churches to do something about that. The other issue is frontal assault. In 1823, the United States Supreme Court declared that it supported the right of discovery. Now, George W. Bush has an interesting issue. Does he believe in precedent? Does he believe you can overthrow Roe versus Wade? If he does, we can go after McIntosh, 1823. It's going to be very interesting for the American people, liberals and conservatives alike, to see what they're going to do. If we keep precedent... Oops. Well, the answer is we overruled Plessy versus Ferguson, 1896, which declared segregation legal in Brown versus Board of Education. So we do selective nullification of Supreme Court acts, and I hope we will keep Roe versus Wade, and I hope we will nullify 1823 decision by the Supreme Court, short named McIntosh. But the frontal assault is going to be very difficult because I've testified both in Canada and the United States, and in both courts, the premise of the government lawyers for Canada, the premise of the government lawyers for the United States is the right of discovery, and on the first day of the trial, they will bring this up and they will read it into the court record just as it was a litany. So it is going to be the public. This Columbus Day, do something about it. Columbus Day is not simply a day to talk about the arrival of a foreign people. It talks about the doctrine that lies at the basis of why Syracuse is white land, why Cornell is white land. Do something about it on Columbus Day. Remind people that this is what it stands for Native people. Native people are not just upset that Columbus got here. It's how he got here with this doctrine, which the Protestant nations adapted as their own.
Yep. Wanted to ask you to talk a little bit about the changes in the balance of power during this time we're talking about, from 1600 to the late 1700s, because as I've read the history, that seems critical in understanding the treaties and where we've come to. So,
yeah. In the American Revolution, there were 22,000 people in New York City. 22,000. We're talking about tiny demographics. I didn't bring up 1524 and the epidemic in western Seneca country for nothing. The average drop of an Indian population just to disease and warfare was 90%. That's the average drop. Some nations dropped even more. So while whites were smaller populations than Indian populations, the gains made by the whites in terms of their immigration was also enhanced by the fact that Indians were continuing to die of disease. So the demographics are frightening. And anyone who doesn't believe that epidemics can have a major impact on world history, such as the AIDS epidemic or whatever epidemic of the era is, needs to look at what happened from 1492 onward. The destruction of Indian America was astounding. The problems with regard to the struggles of power is that Native people were attracted by some of the material goods that the Europeans brought, and then various Europeans allied with different peoples. So the Algonquins, who are the traditional enemies of the Haudenosaunee long before 1492, end up allying with the French. Well, what are the Haudenosaunee going to do? You have the equivalent of a missile race. The Haudenosaunee have to get guns from the Dutch so they can defend themselves from the Algonquins and the French. And everybody has to get more and more guns, because if they don't get guns, they're going to die. So both sides are involved in this. And what do? They go into what we call the Beaver Wars, the wars that control over the areas of North America that have a lot of furs. And the question there is, the Beaver Wars destroy, not only through warfare, but also through philosophy, Native peoples' foundations, because Native peoples believe in an equality of souls. Well, how can you go out and market economy beaver pelts and otter pelts and still respect people with souls? One of the reasons so many Indians converted to Christianity was because Christianity bailed them out on the Beaver War issue. Christians don't believe the beavers have souls. So you become a Christian, you don't have to worry about your tradition. You can go out and kill the beavers for as much as you want. But the Beaver Wars changed the societies. And the question is gambling today the new buffalo, as so many people are romantically saying it? Or is it the new Beaver Wars? And is it going to destroy American Indian cultures just as surely as the Beaver Wars divided them in the 1600s?
We have time for one more question. Yes.
You've talked about the treaties and with the United States and the Haudenosaunee. Can you talk a little bit about how complicated it becomes with us Canadian Haudenosaunees? Because there are, there's man-made barriers, man-made borders there, but the treaties still apply to the Haudenosaunee.
Well, the treaties that were made with England and the United States is recognized by the United States, but Canada doesn't recognize the treaties because they weren't part of that So the problem then is these Canadian governments are saying, well, we weren't a part of it, we didn't agree to that, so the treaties don't apply. But the treaties that were made by the Haudenosaunee, the first one we made was in 1701. The Haudenosaunee allowed occupation or the use of a strip of land 800 miles long, 400 miles wide, to be used by those people that were living up in what is now Canada. The last line of that treaty says the Haudenosaunee will have hunting and fishing rights and gathering rights in that territory, which means that the Haudenosaunee did not turn that land over completely. It was land to be used jointly under this concept of living together and sharing. We have the right, and that treaty is still in effect as far as I know, so we have the right as Haudenosaunee people to hunt in Canada in that 800 by 400 mile square because we have joint use of it. The problem is Canada. Canada doesn't recognize that treaty. It doesn't recognize the Jay Treaty. Jay Treaty of 1794 between the United States and England, not recognized by Canada. So native people living in Canada that come from the Haudenosaunee are having problems now because they say they're not residents, they're not citizens of Canada, and they're forcing them to go through an expensive process to become residents or citizens of Canada. It costs about $1,400 to do this. But this is where this change of power comes in. We had such an agreement meeting in Colgate University, Colgate College some years ago. I was a speaker there. I ended up on the front page of New York Times at that time because of my presentation. And in the audience, when I made this presentation, was a lawyer for the whites who were arguing with the Oneidas. And when I finished, he went right on her. What happened was that we broke for lunch, and it went to lunch, and on the way back, I went by this house. I looked in the window, and there was this nice couch, a few chairs, a television set, but there was no one in the room. And I said, wow, that's an empty room. So I got back to the place where the workshop was being held, and I explained, you know, that the Haudenosaunee has people at the longhouse, and people were moving into the Mohawk empty houses, rooms. And they were sending loads over to the government, New York State, and saying, we found this spot. Is it okay for us to move in there? New York would say, yes, it's okay if you do that. Now, Earl was the one who was writing the letter, so this place then became Earlville. And as you go around New York State, you find Earlville. You find names of various people. And founded in 1884 or something like that. But that's what these people were doing. They had come into our house, went into an empty room, settled, and then asked permission from the state of New York if they could live there. And the state of New York said, yeah, that's a good idea. So I said to the people that there were in this room, I said, I just come by this nice house, had a nice room there, and I said, I'm going to write to the Onondaga Nation and ask if I can move in. Onondaga's Nation said, yeah, that's a good idea. I would have moved into that house, that room, occupied it, and I said, the first person that would come up and say, you can't do that, would be Allen Van Gestel, the lawyer for the people who were opposing the Oneidas. And he went right on her. I would be the first one up there saying, you can't do that, it's not legal. But if it's not legal for me to do that, then how come it's legal for you to do that? Now, to give you an example of how that, you know, I've talked to, I've illustrated that, you know, people don't really understand these things that we talk about because it doesn't happen to them. And I said, when I mentioned before that there's a law that says the Lakotas can't go to the Black Hills, it's sacred grounds for them. We can't go to sacred sites. There's some ceremonies that New York says we can't perform anymore. And one of the reasons why we can't perform these ceremonies is because they don't understand what we're doing. They don't understand the songs. They don't know why we do these things. So I says, well, since we don't understand it and we don't, it can't be right, we'll pass a law that says they can't do it anymore. So in response to that, could I have a raise of hands of how many people got Easter baskets when they were kids? And how many, when they got married, had children give Easter baskets to their children? All right, now in that basket is a chocolate bunny rabbit and jelly beans. How many people know why there's a chocolate bunny rabbit and jelly beans in that basket? Oh, no hands. Well, how about that? One hand. The reason why he knows is because I told him. When I first asked the question, he couldn't answer that. He laid his hand down also. So now we have a situation where you people are putting chocolate bunny rabbits and jelly beans in the basket on Easter Sunday. I asked you why. You don't know why. I don't know why either. So as heard in the Shoney, we should pass a law that said you can't do that anymore. And what do you think you would do coming Easter Sunday? You would do it anyway, correct? Well, we still go to our ceremonial places. We still sing our songs. And the songs that we sing are 2,000 years old or older, depending upon which ceremony we're doing. But these ceremonies that we do are for a purpose. They're to make sure that the environment and the people coexist and work in harmony. We work with the winds, the thunder, the rain, the sky, the stars, the sun and the moon. We have songs for the animals. We have songs for the various animals of the world, of the forest. So we give thanks to them because they're still doing the things that they were set here to do. They provide us with food. Some are birds and they sing for us. Some are trees and they give us shade. They provide us with lumber for our homes. They provide us with fuel for winter so to keep us warm. We give thanks to the trees and to the birds and to the plant life that give us food. But this is who we are and this is what we do. And to pass a law that says I can't do that is a violation of this. So when you start looking at what the New York State is passing laws, we want to pay close attention to that, because if it's directed at us, then a couple of years from now it's going to be directed at you. So pay attention to these laws. And maybe someday we will be like the animals in the forest. We will learn how to live together in peace and harmony with each other, respecting each other's differences. But I was in the barnyard the other day. I didn't see a duck over there trying to change a chicken into a duck. But this happens in your society. Bob mentioned that, you know, that Christianity has been trying to change Native people from their belief to their belief. But I was listening to television the other day, and I'm not making fun of anybody or their ways, but it got me to thinking about some of the stuff that happens to us and whatever. He says, the black man. And he says, I'm wondering about the churches and what they do. He says, we have the birth of Jesus. He says, and how do we celebrate that? He says, well, we cut a tree down, a live tree. We bring it home, stick it in the corner, and watch it die. To celebrate the birth of Jesus. He says, Easter time. He says, the resurrection of Jesus. He says, how do we celebrate that? We buy eggs and we boil them. He says, we color them. Then we put them out in the yard and hide them and have our kids go out there and try to find them to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. And I'm going, well, who are these people anyway? a month ago, Bob was at the house and I told him, I said, you know what, Bob? I said, I think I'll write a book. He said, you're going to write a book? I said, yeah. He said, well, he said, that'll be a good one. I said, well, yeah. He said, what are you going to write about? I said, the title of my book is Who Are These People Anyway? Because I don't understand I don't understand the people that come into our territory and what they do. And just a couple of quick examples. You people see better standing up than you do sitting down. Well, what does he base that on? Go to a football game. and you sit there and you watch. Everybody is sitting in there. They can see the whole field. But as the play goes down to the end zone, guess what happens? Everybody stands up. So I'm thinking that these people see better standing up than they do sitting down. But it brings a question, who are these people anyway that do that? Now, another example is you fall down in the city. Say you fall down on the sidewalk. Guess what happens? People form a circle around you. And the first thing that someone says is, stand back. Give them air. Which to me means that if a circle of you people get, or if you people get in a circle, you suck up all air. So the guy laying on the ground doesn't get any. So I say, well, who are these people anyway? They can do this. And Bob says, boy, do I got a list for you. But we have these concerns, but I know that you're different than we are. You have different things, thinking, different capabilities, and your technology is unbelievable. In order for a meeting to take place a long time ago, and even today, because it's a little quicker, but if there was going to be a grand council at Onondaga, under the process that was set up in 1142, we would send a runner from Onondaga to the Mohawks, to the Oneidas, to the Cayugas, to the Senecas, and we would tell them that there's going to be a meeting on such and such a day. That runner was given instructions as to what he was supposed to say, and he would give the agenda. And he would run to the nation and then deliver the message and come back under a protocol and process and procedures. When the Europeans come into our territory, they didn't have a process for this, so they adopted our territory. And when they wanted to meet with us, they sent a runner who brought wampum to Onondaga and said, we want to have a meeting on such and such a date. And we would go to the meeting, and wampum would be displayed and given. And if you want to read about how this happened, to read, I always pronounce it Hoag Report, H-O-U-G-H. And then most recently I found out it's pronounced Huff, the Huff Report. But it's a commission to extinguish Indian title to lands, 1788. And in there you read how meetings were set up between the state of New York and the various members of the Haudenosaunee. But wampum was sent, and wampum was given back and forth as messages were passed back and forth. That is up until 1790, somewhere around there. James Duane says to President DeWitt Clinton, says, look, you can't keep meeting these people this way. You're meeting them on their terms, which puts you equal with them, or them equal with you, however you want to look at it. He says, if you're going to take over and put them as subjects to the New York State of New York, you have to change. You have to use your ways. And so when that happened, this... the process that was set up by this was then no longer used. Wampum stopped being passed back and forth. I know it was reported in the papers that George Pataki is talking with Native leaders. Well, that's not true. I met with George Pataki some years ago, explained to him that we have a lot of issues to sit down and talk about, and we need someone to talk to. So he's all right to give us Judy Hard to talk to, one of his... lawyers. So we met with her for a year, and we ironed out a compact for the distribution and sale of cigarettes and gasoline in Indian Territory that would regulate their commerce. And we had with us a representative of the federal government, Department of Justice, because it says in the Constitution of the United States that no agreement can be valid that is made between state and Indian nations without representation from the federal government or under the guidelines of the federal government. So we had a federal representative at these meetings. We met for a whole year, and we decided how we could work together in trade and commerce, even though that's a violation of the Constitution also, because the only one that can regulate trade and commerce between the United States and foreign governments is the United States. And we are a foreign government, even though we're residing within the boundary lines of the United States or New York. As I mentioned before, we are a sovereign nation. We have our own government, our own laws, and we have treaties. We have three treaties with the United States. Fort Stanwyck in 1784, Fort Harmon in 1789, Canandaigua in 1794. These treaties are still in effect. Hanging on the wall in the longhouse of the Onondaga is a treaty belt of the Canandaigua Treaty, given to us by the United States at Canandaigua on November 11, 1794. It's a belt that's 6 foot long. It's about 6 inches wide. It has 13 figures down the belt, and it has a house and two figures alongside of the house in the middle of the belt. It is said that one figure represents the President of the United States. The other figure represents Tadarajo, the spiritual leader of the Haudenosaunee. As we sat and renewed and sanctioned the peace and friendship between the United States and the Haudenosaunee, and then it would last forever. And as I described before, forever is as long as the water is flowing downhill. So those treaties are still in effect. It's too bad that you, the residents of the state of New York, have been denied your history and the relationship between the Haudenosaunee and the state of New York. How many know that New York State is 300 years old? Wonder why you don't know that. You're right in central New York and you don't know that. The reason why I know that is because Governor Mario Cuomo invited me, Orrin Lyons, and Leon Senador to celebrate the 300th anniversary of the founding of New York. So the three of us sat up on the reviewing stand as the parade went by and so forth. And then we sat right underneath the fireworks. So we got showered with the firework papers and so forth. And after the ceremonies was over with, Bob Batson, legal counsel for Mario Cuomo, said to us, "I'd like to take you to dinner. Would that be agreeable to you?" And we don't ever refuse food. And we said, "Yes, we'll go with you." So we jumped in his car, we followed him to this restaurant, his favorite restaurant. Now, this is 10:30 at night, and we walk into the restaurant. Now, you know, Dick, you can ask a question. One question takes 15, 20 minutes to answer, because you have to give all the background stuff to this before you understand what is being said. But this belt says that in the future, when we meet, we will address each other as brothers, but in the future when we meet, you will know who I am. By the way, I am dressed in the way that I speak. So whenever we met with dignitaries from the federal or the state government, we always wear clothes that show who we are. And so at the 300th anniversary of the state of New York, Leon, Orrin, and I were in full regalia. We had our bonnets on with our feathers. We had beaded moccasins on, our loincloths and our ribbon shirts, our sashes with silverware like this, on our sash. Well, the door opens up, and the owner of the restaurant is behind the bar. His eyes are about this big. Because Bob Batson, like I mentioned before, Bob was at Cornell dressed like a pilgrim. Well, Bob Batson decided that he would go to the 300th anniversary as a pilgrim. So he had this long coat, or a coat with long tails, knickers and white socks and buckled shoes. So 10:30 at night, the door opens up, and this pilgrim walks in, followed by three Indians in full. And he says, "I don't care what's going on. You people are not coming in here and I'm serving you." He would not let us come into the place. We had to go to another place. We went to a diner down the road. But the reason, part of that is because these people don't know who we are. I was down at the War Memorial one day, at Dan Ward, said, no, he was over here. Dan? Over here. He runs New York Folklore History Society. Asked us to be present at Festival of Nations. And so I took a group of Onondagas down there. We sang our songs and did our dances, and we had our food there. And while I'm standing there, a boy about 9 or 10 years old in fourth grade comes up, pulls on my apron and says, are you an Indian? I said, yes, I am. He says, well, that's impossible. And I says, why is that? He says, because you don't exist. And I said, wow. Here is this boy in the third or fourth grade telling me that I don't exist. So what is New York State Education Department teaching these people? So we took a look at what they were teaching, and we find out that you're not being taught about the history of the state of New York and its negotiations with the Haudenosaunee or its dealings. And we've been dealing with the state of New York for 300 years, and you people don't know about that. You don't know about the relationship, but I suggest that you take a look at the Hoag Report of 1788 and see that the Haudenosaunee and the state of New York have been meeting about issues between us all of these years. And suddenly they stopped, but the issues still continue on. So one of these days, we're going to be able to have our day in court, and the perpetrators are going to be pointed out, and maybe justice will come to us one of these days where the courts will rule in favor of the Onondagas. This last court decision that we had that Bob mentioned, the Sherrill decision, was terrible. Supreme Court didn't even look at their own history. They ruled that the Oneidas could not claim their land because they've been 200 years and they were late and they didn't claim it before. The Oneidas could not get into the courts. We are not allowed to go into the courts of New York and present our grievances. It wasn't until 1985 that we were finally allowed into the court. Supreme Court should have known that, but they ruled that since it's been 200 years, they couldn't claim these lands as theirs, as sovereign parts of their territory. Violation of this concept. It's been with us for 400 years. Our people all know about this belt. You ask any one of the Longhouse people, and those of us that follow the history of the Haudenosaunee, we know about this belt, the two-row wampum belt. But you don't know about your history because New York State didn't want you to know what was going on in the 1700s or what they were doing or what they'd done. As I said, mentioned before, they came down and they made treaties. Now, I asked about Easter Sunday. And that's an example, you know, of what if I do things to you? If I say, you know, it's against the law now for you guys to give Easter baskets with chocolate bunny rabbits and jelly beans on Easter Sunday. Now that affects you, and you're saying, wait, we can't do that. Well, you have passed laws. In 1924, you made us citizens of the United States, whether we want to be or not. But the process that was passed was not that we were citizens of the United States. What was passed was that the Secretary of Interior was given the right to issue certificates of citizenship to us who wanted to be a citizen. In order to do that, we had to renounce our citizenship of the nation that we belonged to and then apply for citizenship. And if we did that, he would give us a certificate. I don't have a certificate of citizenship for the United States, therefore I'm not a citizen. And my cousins that are sitting in the second row from Oneida, I know they don't have any either. They are members of the Oneida Nation. They are not citizens of the United States. But let me explain, you know, go back to illustrate what happened when these people moved into our home and settled in our lands. We'll do that by using this room as an example. This is now Onondaga Nation territory. And our territory runs from that wall, Lake Ontario, down to this wall, which is the center of Pennsylvania. That wall over there, and on the other side is the Oneidas. This wall and the other side of that is the Cayugas. The Onondagas own all this, or were in this land. But you have moved into it now, and you occupy it. So it's now it's considered your property. But this piece of paper that Bob talked about, this document of discovery, if we can have all of the Haudenosaunee people come up on stage, Helen, come, get up here. And you're done. Come. There are others here from Oneida. I've seen John Dyer. Someone from Canada asked, you're holding a journey, come on up. This will only take a couple of minutes, but it was a very graphic illustration. Oh, you got a Mohawk walking in the back there. He's on his way up. Now, this is what happened to us. Document of discovery is now in effect. We have just discovered this room. And on behalf of the Haudenosaunee, this is now Haudenosaunee territory. And I want all of you people here to move into these first four rows. That will be where you're living. Resident Onondaga is what we call it now. But all you people, just move into this section here. Crowd in as best you can. We're now living on a piece of land that is 4 miles, 4.5 miles long. It's 2 miles wide. And all of us that lived in this territory are now squashed into this little territory. That's why I'm asking all you people to come down and squash yourself into this little place, which you will now call home. Now, what happened in 1142? The peacemaker put up a system, a clan system, and we were all assigned clans, or women were assigned clans, and women were given the responsibility of carrying on the names and the nationality and that clan. So you are what your mother is. All of these women up here belong to a clan and a nation. Their children belong to that same nation and that same clan. The United States met with us. Bob mentioned a date, 1744, when Thomas Jefferson, came to Onondaga and asked about our government. We explained how our government was and how it works. And it would be good for them to take over and join together, put their 13 colonies together as one, under one government, because that's where their strength is, and work under these kind of rules and regulations. So that happened 22 years later when they declared their independence from England and they had the Revolutionary War. And a message went over to England, and he ran in, banged on a door, went in and said to the King of England, the colonists are revolting. And the King of England said, yes, and they're ugly too. And so we explained our clan system and so forth, and so you took over many of our ways for your government. Now, how is that? Well, at Onondaga, we're split up into clans, and the clans are, the nation is split so that we can help each other. We have mudhouse people, longhouse people, wolf, bear, turtle, eel, hawk. These are our clans. And so people who, I belong to the wolf clan, so I can go to Oneida and be with relatives from the Oneida wolf clan, or I can go to Mohawk territory and be. Now, the United States looked at our system and they don't know exactly, apparently they don't pay attention. Because you two have clans now, right? You have the elephant and the donkey. So how many donkeys do we have here? And elephants? Now what's going to happen now is you're going to have to change your ways. You're sitting in here We have 9 clans. Now, in order to for you to learn how we're going to do this, we're going to take the young people that are in this group and put you into the lobby, and we're going to teach you our language. And that's the only thing that only language you can speak while you're sitting here. You can only speak Onondaga. And if you speak English, we're going to reprimand you. What happened to us is we got hit across our hands with a yardstick by the people in the schools that we were taken to if we spoke English. So you people sitting here, if you speak English, we're going to reprimand you. So if you get rapped on the knuckles, you'll know why. You're speaking English. You can't speak English. You can speak it on the Onondaga. But this is what happened to us. And now we're going to start passing laws. Said you can't do this, you can't do that. But this kind of illustrates what happens when you don't pay attention to what's going on. Now we have this small territory up there where we call Onondaga. And we're saying these things that happened a long time ago should not have happened. The federal government was supposed to, under the treaties, stop New York State from doing what they did, but they didn't. And now, 200 years later, we're trying to right a wrong. And there needs to be a lot of healing done here, not only on our part, but the people that are involved. And the people involved are us and you. We were deprived of the free uses of our land as guaranteed by treaties. We are subjected to oppression. Our children were taken out of their homes and sent to boarding schools, and their identity, their culture, their language was taken away from them. And I illustrated that here, but it didn't really happen. My messenger got lost. He was supposed to come down and grab a couple and take you out there and teach you some Onondaga. Maybe he got hungry and went home. But anyway, I'll give you an idea of what happens. And as long as you're in this section here, you belong to that. But if you move out of it, you no longer lose, and you lose all your rights as Native people, says the state of New York. I don't agree with that, and I've argued with Bob Venables about these kind of laws that they pass. But this is an illustration, anyway, of what happened to us. We own this big territory, and now we're all shoved into this little area. It's trying to survive. We're also trying to teach that even though we are there, we can teach, and we can heal. Not only heal us for what has been done to us, but also to heal you people, because you suffer also. Because of what happened, because the state of New York didn't teach you about us, you don't know about us, you don't know about our concepts, our ideas, and what our thinking. And maybe if you were taught how to live with the environment, we wouldn't have a polluted lake, we wouldn't have a polluted environment, and we wouldn't have global warming. There's a new movie coming out. Al Gore's got one out where he shows icebergs falling apart because of global warming. This all comes about because of the total disrespect for the environment. Red Jacket, the Red Cloud made a speech way back in 1868 where he says, you know, you got to watch what you do to the web, because whatever you do to the web, you do to yourself. So if you violate natural laws are going to, you're going to have consequences to that. What are natural laws? Natural laws is the wind. I guess what we can look at Los Angeles, New Orleans, and the wind that came, and the winds that are coming through, tornadoes, what, 17 tornadoes in the last month or so, killing hundreds of people. I was talking to EPA people about this, and the storm came up the Mississippi River, got into Indiana somewhere, and then turned towards Onondaga. It came a few hundred miles, stopped, and then turned again. This time it went north. And it went in between Lake Ontario and Lake Erie. It went around Lake Ontario on the north side of it. Never came into Onondaga territory. Never hit New York. So our ceremonies are a very important part of who we are and what we're all about. And our ceremonies take care of the environment. And you people are going to have to learn how to do that. Because if you don't, we're heading for destruction.
Irving Paulus Jr., Onondaga Beaver Clan Chief, speaking at the third event in the series Onondaga Land Rights and Our Common Future, a collaborative educational series bringing together the Central New York community, academics, and Haudenosaunee. We also heard historian Robert Venables of Cornell University. The next program in the series will be this Tuesday, April 18th, and will feature Seneca scholar Professor John Mohawk of SUNY Buffalo. It will take place at the Syracuse Stage at Genesee and University Streets in Syracuse at 7 p.m. For more information, visit peacecouncil.net/noon. peacecouncil.net/NOON. And next Saturday is Earth Day. Come celebrate it in Schuyler County at the New York State Fire Academy grounds on State Route 14 in Montour Falls, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. This year's theme ties the arts to nature under the banner From, Of, and at One with the Earth. Some of the highlights will include handmade ceramic tiles, storytelling by Native Northeast focusing on Native American creation stories from the northeastern woodlands, and Transformation, a world history of mask making and face painting, to inspire festival participants to construct individualized masks. That's Saturday 10 to 1 at the Fire Academy in Montour Falls. And you can download MP3s or podcasts of this and previous editions of Unwelcome Guests at our website, unwelcomeguests.org. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening. And I'm friendly to strangers. My ride and your running makes my guns talk best. But the rangers and deputies are hired by the rich man to catch me and hang me, my shining black. Catch me napping one day and they'll kill me. Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will all